حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، أما بعد. Every society is divided into these two groups of people. They are those who influence others, and they are those who are influenced by others. In any group of people, any community, you will see that there will be people who will lead the way, and there will be people who will follow. The people who lead, it is in them and in their character that they are able to manage other people, influence other people, and that's why they end up at the head of the society. And the followers are influenced by the people, they follow those who take the lead, and they end up becoming the masses and those who are underneath the society. And throughout history, when we look at the different societies across the world, we will see that usually what ends up happening is that the people who have influence, who lead the way, end up becoming the leaders of the society, becoming the rulers of the society. And the people who get influenced, they end up becoming subjected to these leaders and these rulers. And now when this happens and this formation takes place, the rights of the weak, the masses, because these people are strong, who are leading, they have influence, they tend to take advantage of the people, they exploit the weak, and they end up trampling the rights of the masses. And since this occurs, usually the people who are weak, they have no representation, they have no way to fight for their rights, they have no way to defend themselves against exploitation. And hence you see kingdoms form, people become kings through the fact that they have might, they have power, they have influence. And those who are weak, they end up giving up their rights and being exploited by these people. Now the question is, when you know that this is the natural way that society goes, if you leave the people alone, we'll see right away, you will see that some people will become in charge and some people will become the followers. This is just natural. And when that happens, you see the strong take advantage of the weak. The question is, how do you stop this exploitation from happening? How do you stop these people who are stronger in the society from taking advantage of those who are weaker? What can be done to prevent this? Because if you let that go on, there will be oppression, there will be injustice. And because of this reason, obviously, as human beings grew up, the world advanced in thought. They came up with two solutions. Two things they said that we can do to prevent this from happening. What can be done? They said the first thing that we need to do is to, because of the fact that it is the influential, the rich, the powerful are few. The masses who are weak are more in numbers. So the first thing that they said is that let's give the power in the hands of the people. Let's give the power in the hands of the people. Let them take control and choose their leaders. And obviously this came out in the form of election. For example, let the people elect their leaders. And if they see that the leader is not good, then in the next election they can elect him out and bring someone else in. And so the cycle runs like that. So this was the first thing that they said, that, you know, because the people are weak, we need to give them the power. Give them the power so that they can take control of their lives. And they are able to make their own destiny by choosing their leaders. This was the first way that they came up with. And the next thing that they said is that we can also do another thing, is that we can put these powerful parties or people and pit them against each other and make them rivals. Like, for example, you make an open market system where those who are influential can compete against each other, and they can, because of the rivalry they have and the competition they have, they will weaken each other and they will not take advantage of the people. Now, obviously, if there's only one company, right, let's say in an open market, that makes a certain product, they will have the monopoly. So they said, all right, you know what, here's what we'll do. We'll go in and we'll let the others who are there also rich, let them also compete with these people, and they will bring down the prices and they will not take advantage of the weak who don't have the ability to fight against this onslaught. This was the second way that was proposed and that was implemented in the world. Now, my friends, obviously, in the old days, when the rich, the influential, the powerful used to come into power, the way it used to happen was through bloodshed and warfare. You know, if I can gather enough men, enough people to fight against the ruler, so I go to war with him, there'll be bloodshed, and if I win, I will become the ruler and the king. This was the way it used to happen before. That obviously changed, and now leaders are not formed by how much might they have or power they have. Now you see that there is election and people elect their leaders, which is obviously a much more sensible system than warfare and bloodshed. But when you look at both these proposals that were made, both of them are flawed. Both these systems are flawed. When you say that you give the power in the hands of the people and those who are weak, let them elect the leaders. So now those who were already leaders before, now they know that they could not use their sword to come into power. So what do? They use their influence and money to come into power. Now, instead of subduing the people with power, now they subject the people through influencing them and swaying their thoughts. Now you see you have people who are leaders. The same people who used to lead before are the same people leading today. Now the only difference is that in those days they used to come into power with the sword. Now all they need to do is sway the minds of the people. Now how hard is it to sway the minds of people? Now whoever has more money, whoever has more resources, can buy more ad time and TV time and influence the people, and the people vote for them. If their only job is to formulate the opinion of the people, then they who have the money to do that will do it. So obviously the person who's weak, the person who has the ability to rule the society, never ends up ruling the society. It's always the people who have money and influence who end up ruling the society again. The same thing happens again, and we say that, oh no, we wanted to make sure that, you know what, if they don't like the leader, they can elect someone else. Well, again, the person that is going to come later, you think that he's going to be any different? He's the same person who has money and influence, and he's able to do things. See, swaying the minds of people is very easy. They know now how to do that. All you need to do is learn the art. If someone wants to sway the minds of Shias, then obviously it's very easy. He will come here to the majlis of Imam Hussein wearing black clothes and say that, "I am with you." And you see that all the people will be like, "Mashallah, he's good. He came to the majlis." You see that what's happened now? You see the minds of people are swayed. If Obama makes Eid prayers, then everyone's like, "Oh, Obama made Eid prayers with Muslims." What does that show? Oh, he's good. You know, he made Eid prayers with Muslims. Or worse yet, if the Congress allows the Muslims to go and pray Friday prayer at the Congress, they're like, "You see, they're allowing us to pray there." You see, how easy is it to sway the minds of people? How easy is it to make fool of themselves? People are swayed by these things. So you give them that which they want, and you see that they're with you. That they're with you, and still those people who are ruling will rule and will take advantage of the people. The people and the masses still have no rights. They're still being exploited, and you see, obviously in a more sophisticated way than before. In the old days, they used to just come and see how many animals you have. They take the animals and go. Nowadays, you know, it's a more refined way of doing that. It's called taxes. Increase their taxes, do this, do that, and you will see you don't even know what's going on. Different ways of doing it, but the work is the same, and still the people are being exploited. But then, no, the issue is that when we have a system like this, it's the people who have oversight of the leaders. They can see them, oversee them to make sure they're not doing right. Tell me, who has oversight of the president? Who can even meet the president? You can't even meet him, let alone have oversight of him. You can't even get close to him. When you can't get close to him, how are you going to have oversight of him? There's no way. It's all foolishness that they are deceiving us with. And what ends up happening is still that those who are powerful end up remaining powerful, those who are weak end up remaining weak. This is one way, and this is flawed. You see that there's no way that this could happen. It is illogical, irrational for it to actually work. You cannot make it work. Now they say, alright, you know, there's another way of doing it. Let's pit these people together. Let's put all these people together and say that, make rivals of themselves and let them compete against each other. Okay, that's an idea. We can work with that. Let's see. If we pit people together, and all the strong people together, the rich people together, what is making sure that these rich people don't get together and make a stand against those who are weak? Look at the drug dealers. What do? They say, hey, listen, you know, we're in the same community. We are brotherhood. Right? So you take this area, I take this territory, and you know what? You do your business there, I do my business there, and they shake hands, and they still exploit the people. What is preventing them from getting together and making a union against the people? There's nothing that's stopping them if you just let them be. So now, my friends, understand this. From here, both these systems that were given still are flawed, and still those who are influential are still exploiting those who are not influential. Those who are strong are still exploiting those who are not strong. So now, in order for this, to prevent this from happening, Islam gave two solutions. Is it that do these two things and you will see that this will rectify. To do Islam in the society, two things are needed. To do Islam, this problem that exists, and it's a natural problem, you can't get rid of it. But how can we solve it? So they said these are two ways that we can work with it. How do we do that? He says, all right, we will put a overseer and a leader above those people who are rich and influential and powerful in the society. Those who are powerful, we will put someone on top of them. Islam calls it wilayat. He says, we'll put someone on top of them that will oversee them to make sure that they don't exploit those who are poor, those who are weak. We will put someone on top. That's one thing. Then the other thing is that we will encourage the people towards taqwa and towards becoming aware and doing amr bil maruf and nahi anil munkar. On one hand, you have leadership. On the other hand, you have the grassroots. The leadership is appointed above those who are powerful and influential, so that they can be seen. Then the grassroots are raised in awareness, so that they become aware and they become more criticizing, so that they can see what's going on and stand up against what is wrong. When both of these things occur, then that problem that exists of the rich taking advantage of the poor, or the strong exploiting the weak, that problem will be eradicated and there will be Islah. There will be Islah there. So now you see that if there is an open market, there's an open market, you see that me as a businessman, you see that, you know, wherever you see that there's only one gas station on the road in the area around there, you'll see the prices are always up, because he knows there's no one else there. So now what happened is that if there's another gas station that's built right across the street, I mean, right away you'll see the prices fall. You know, so now if this person goes there to the other owner and says, listen, it's you and me here, no one else is here, so you know what, let's set the prices. If he makes that, then what happens? Then all the people are still being exploited. So now, if such a thing happens, then Islam has appointed a wali on top of them to say that, wait a minute, you can't do this. This is hurting the people. So now, you are blameworthy, and hence he rectifies them. He says, stop that, you stop that. If someone, for example, has the ability to do something, a business, but these businessmen got together to make sure that no one else comes into their business. These three businesses, they got together and they say that, you know what, let's not let anyone else come in the business. That one person who has the ability to also compete, but because he doesn't have the resources, he's not in that group, he's not able to prosper. So now what happens? The wali comes and says, hey, wait a minute, you three stop, let this one come also. Let him come in also. So now what's happening is that those who are weak and poor, those who don't have the ability, they're not with the elite, they have the chance to compete. They have the chance to be out there and prosper. My friend, if wilayat is not there, then the rights of the oppressed will never be given to them. The oppressed and the weak, they have rights, they have the opportunity and the chance to rise up when there's a wali and a leader in above them. If there is no leader above them, then those weak who are there, they will always be condemned to weakness, because the people who are strong and influential will always take advantage of them. My friends, the umbrella of wilayat is an umbrella that lets the people who are weak have breathing room. In fact, it's the only umbrella where weak and oppressed people can breathe and live. This is the umbrella that you see that is there. If that is not occurring, if someone, for example, amongst our people say, oh, you know, this wilayat and this and that, we don't have that. You know, they have no shuur, they have no awareness. The reason they have no awareness is, who are you siding with? If there's no one to stop the rich from taking advantage of the poor, then what are you trying to say here? Who are you siding with? Are you siding with those who are oppressed and exploited? My friends, understand this. Where is wilayat? This wilayat needs to be there in order for this problem to stop, so that there could be oversight of those people who will take advantage of the poor. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.
One more salawat for the light. Good. It's always good to see the audience when you're speaking. Right? So now what happened is that the wilayat, my friends, understand, Islam had placed wilayat so that this wilayat can prevent exploitation from happening. Can prevent the rich from exploiting. Obviously the rich and influential don't like wilayat. Or they don't like wilayat. It goes against their interest. Right? It goes against their interest. That's why you see, for example, wherever wilayat is established, the Islamic Republic, why are the rich against this? Obviously because they can't exploit the poor, that's why. You know, they see the rest of the countries, all the other countries where the rich are exploiting the poor, and they say, hey, listen, why is it in our country we can't do this? Of course that's the case. That's why they're against it. You know, they should be against it. If they're not against it, then there's something wrong with that wilayat. It's sold out. Right? It will be sold out. Right? If you see, you know, they're all right with it. The rich, they have to be against it. Because the idea was to stop this problem from happening. And it's a natural problem. The influential will always take advantage of the weak. You can't stop that from happening. You put three people together. Who's the strongest, you will see. You know. If you put me with two kids, you know, I'll take their candies. And they'll be happy for thanking me for it. Thank you for taking it. Right? This is what happens, you know. I mean, if you go to school, there are always those people who are the bullies, you know, they'll take your lunch money. Right? And you'll be like, you know, I didn't eat lunch. Why? Because you took my money. Always be there. There has to be an oversight. If there's an oversight, of course the bully is not gonna like it. Because now he's not getting lunch money, he's not getting his homework done for free. So what happens, my friend? This is the reason why Islam has recommended wilayat, so that wilayat can be an oversight. You know, like we have antitrust laws over here, you know, that are there. Just like that, wilayat is the antitrust, but it's a real person that could execute that. It could make it happen. Now, on the other side, Islam just doesn't say, oh, you know what, if there's wali, alhamdulillah, now you all can relax and do whatever you want. No, that's not the issue also. Islam now says, on the other hand, you as the people must become aware, you as the people must become more muttaqi and aware of what's going on and follow the teachings of Islam. If you start doing Amar Bil Maruf and Nahi Anil Munkar, that will be a protection for the society. Really, my friends, understand this. If someone who has taqwa, who fears Allah, and who follows the teachings of Ahlul Bayt, who is aware of Islamic law, and he follows it with ma'rifat, do you think it's easy to fool him and deceive him? Is it? It's not easy to deceive a person who knows what's going on. That's why a mu'min has been described as smart. Al-mu'min qayyis. He's smart. He's very well aware of what's going on. Islam encouraged mu'mineen to be like that. Why? Because when mu'mineen are aware and strong and are doing Amr bil Maruf and Nahi al Munkar, that protects the leadership. It lets the leader do his job effectively. But if the people are loose, if the people are doing their own things, then obviously what happens here? The leader will have a harder time trying to control the society. You see, if this society is in problem, then it's not always the leader's fault. The leader wants to oversee, but if the people, if they don't have it in them, if they don't do their due diligence, then you know what? He won't be able to effectively do his job. He won't be able to effectively do his job. That's the reason. Now, when we look at this, how Islam wanted these two conditions. If two conditions are met, then Islah can be done in the society. Understand what I'm saying? All this I explain for this one reason. How do you do Islah in the society? Islam gave these two things. One, establish wilayat. Two, establish the education and educated following. Have two things in place, then you see Islah can be done. Then Islah can be done. If you understood what I'm saying, now let me bring you to Karbala. Let me bring you to Imam Hussein. What did Imam Hussein want to do in the society with this uprising? What did he say he wants to do? What did he want to do? He says, "Inni kharajtu litalab al-islah fi ummat jaddi." I am leaving so I can do islah in the ummat of my grandfather. He wanted to do islah. Do Amr bil Maruf and Nahi al Munkar. Make Islah in the society. Rectify the society. What society? A society where the influential are taking advantage of the poor, where the strong are exploiting the weak. To rectify that society. That's why he made this movement. But when did he make it? Understand? On one hand, when he received the 16,000 letters from Kufa, Mu'mineen who wrote to him that we are with you, that we are standing with you, that we are there for you. You rise up, we'll have your back. We'll make sure that you will achieve your goals. We will be there for you. When the people wrote to him, my friend, understand this. Again, two conditions are needed. The wilayat on one hand, and the other hand, the people who are aware and want goodness and want to do Amr bil Maruf and Nahi al Munkar. When the people wrote letters to Imam Hussein, the second condition was fulfilled. Because the second condition was fulfilled, so now Imam Hussein knew this was his obligation to fulfill the first condition. Because the people are ready to support him, now it's wajib on him to go forward and take their wilayat and establish a society and do Islah in the society. Two conditions are necessary. You need the people who are willing to support right, and you need a leader who is able to do the wilayat over the people. You had the leader in Imam Hussein, but he never rose up before this. But once the people wrote to him, now he saw the second condition is fulfilled. So he came forward to take the wilayat of the community. To take the leadership of the community. That's why he came. You see, my friends, before I go on, just want to make you understand this. You know, imams have wilayats. Anbiya have wilayats. They have the right to rule over the people. But did you ever see a prophet of Allah claim his right to the people and say, I am your leader, let me rule over you? No. None of the prophets said, no, I'm your leader, I will rule over you if you like it or not. No. If the people are ready for the wilayat, then they will take their role and responsibility. If the people are not ready, then they will sit in their homes and preach to the people and raise them up so that one day they can be ready. They never claim their haq, right? Even though it's their haq, it's their right to rule. You need to understand this also, you know what I mean? Every haq is not to be claimed. You know, I mean, here what happened is that every time, you know, we speak about rights, this is a misunderstanding, right? That if Allah said that this is the right of someone, it doesn't mean that you claim it. You only claim the right when the other side is ready and understand that you have a right. They should also understand. Otherwise, if you impose yourself on them, they'll look at it as zulm. You know? So if the husband, for example, has the right over the wife, you know, that she cannot leave the home without his permission. Is that right? Allah gave the right. That a wife, she cannot leave the home unless the husband allows her. So now, because he has a right, now they think that I can impose that right. No, the other side must understand that you have a right also. If they don't understand, then what happens? Then they will view it as zulm. Just like the Anbiya never claimed their right until the people understood that they have the right to rule. They have the right. That's when you claim the right. You don't need to claim the right. You are given that right. This comes in all the rights. You know, rights are not there to be claimed. Rights are there to be understood. When you understand there's a right, then you don't need to fight for your right. It's given to you. You know, for example, when you want to form Jamaat prayers, right, you come in Jamaat prayers. The imam of the Jamaat doesn't make the niyat, I'm doing Jamaat. It's the people who make the niyat, I'm doing Jamaat. They are the ones who form it. If they make the niyat, then the Jamaat is formed. If they make the niyat, the followers have to make that niyat. They need to come forward and say, we are doing Jamaat. Then the imamat is established. Understand this. This is why you see, when Hussein saw that the people are ready for wilayat, that's why he moved forward. Because both the conditions have been fulfilled to do Islam in the society. Then he moved forward. So now when he moved forward, what happened is that the people of Kufa, they backed out. You know, they just backed out. When they backed out, what happened? Because they backed out, now one of the conditions for Islam is finished. One of the conditions of Islam is finished. Now Imam Hussein wanted to do Islam. His niyat has not gone away. He is still doing Islam. But the second condition is gone. Now Imam Hussein cannot become the wali of the people because the people have left him. If the people leave him, now Imam Hussein is alone. But he still wants to do Islam. But you see, now Imam Hussein looked at the situation. Now he wanted to do Islam. There are two ways of doing Islam, my friends. There are two ways of doing Amr bil Maruf and Nahi al Munkar. If you have power, then you do Amr bil Maruf and Nahi al Munkar with the power you have. You know, like if you go to Iran, for example, Islamic Republic is there, Islamic law is there. So what happens is that if you see someone doing wrong, so you can arrest him, take him to jail, whip him. Now, we are living in Seattle. We are mu'mineen. If we see one of the mu'min, he does wrong, are we able to do that? Right. And there are people here in America, right? They can, you know, tell you about some American groups of Muslims that are out there. You know, there are a lot of American groups of Muslims, right, that have become cults, right? And there are certain groups, you know, who want to implement Islamic law. You know, so one brother, you know, he was on duty at the masjid as night guard, and they found him sleeping on his job. He was sleeping on his job. So the next day they had a trial at the masjid. They said, "You are sleeping on your job, that means that you get 10 lashes. And they hide him up to an HD TV and gave him 10 lashes. So obviously, my friends, you know, here, you can't implement that. There's no way you can implement that. So now what happens is that if you can't implement that, how will you do Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi al Munkar? When you don't have power, how do you do Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi al Munkar? My friends, understand this. Understand Imam Hussein from here. Imam Hussein went to take the wilayat of the people. Because the people wanted it, he went there to take it. But the people left him. But he still has to do Islah. How does he do Islah? He's saying, if the people have left me, my intention of Islah is not finished. I will not do Islah by power, but I will do Islah as being Mazloom. So I will create a Karbala. I will create a Karbala. I will create a situation where I will become so good. I will become so good. Because I don't have the power now, because the people have left me, I don't have the power to rectify the society. Now I will do it in a different way, and he's teaching us how to do it. He said, I will become so good that that evil which exists in the society will look so ugly that people will leave that ugliness and they would want to come to God. Let me, my friends, understand what Imam Hussein did. Let me explain this better if you send me a salawat. You know, doing Amr bil Ma'ruf, Nahi al Munkar for a Mazloom is different than when you do it as a Hakim, power. There's certain ways that, you know, the way Imam Hussein did Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi al Munkar is very unique, and it is something that we neglect. We neglect many times, my friends. Sometimes you see Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi al-Munkar is done by being, when you see wrong in the society, it is done by being so good that the wrong begins to look so ugly. You know, if you're with certain people, you see them doing wrong, and if you stand strong and be good, they themselves will be ashamed of their own actions. This is a really effective way of doing things, my friends. You know, we heard the hadith, you know, a lot of history also, like Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein, when they were young. And this old man, one of the Sahaba of the Prophet, was making wudu, and he was making it incorrectly. So Imam Hassan, Imam Hussein wanted to teach him how to do it right. So they went to him, and both of them made wudu, and both of them made it right. And they asked him, which one is right? He looked at them and realized, you know what? No, you are right and I am wrong. I was making it wrong. The issue is that you be so good that you see that the people around you will start becoming ashamed of their wrong. Become so good that those who are around you will, their ugliness will show, and they would feel ashamed of themselves. You know? You know, we went, you know, for example, you know, one time this alim, he was on his way to give a speech somewhere, and you know, for Tabligh, and he went out there, and the car he was going in was one of those old cars, you know, old cars, rackety cars, you know, making noise and this and that. He's a good alim, so, you know, I mean, he wanted to joke, you know, what kind of a car is this? You know, at least if there's a car that's, you know, a little bit more comfortable, then, you know what, we would reach there, you know, and we will still be okay to give a speech. Right now with this car, by the time we reach there, you know, we'll be exhausted. You know, but he didn't make the joke. He didn't want to make the joke. And he reached that place. When he reached the place, they said, you know, that there's another alim they have, resident alim they have, you know, who comes here and gives the speech. He says, well, you know, how does he come over here? They say, well, he takes a bus to come here. He takes a bus every week to come there. And he was like, really? Thinking of what he, you know, would have said, and became ashamed that he's taking a bus and I'm complaining about a car. You know, at times what happened is that when you are so good, you make the other people recognize that how wrong they are. This, you see, is such an effective way of doing Amar bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar. Imam Hussein, when he came to Karbala, he wanted to now, because he doesn't have the wilayat now, the people left him. That condition is gone. So now he wants to do Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar. He wants to do Islam and rectify the society. So now he made himself look so apparent, his goodness so apparent, that the ugliness that was in the society began looking so ugly that the people recognized that this is ugly and we should leave it. You see, this is a way of doing Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi. This is how you do it. This is how Imam Hussein had done it. You know, and this is when you see that when Imam Ali, when you look at Imam Ali, right, you see him also. Certain times, how did he make the other people, those who had bad intentions, look humiliated? How did he do that? You know, I mean, if you look at it, for example, Khaybar. Everyone went out there, you know, to win the battle and win the battle. Everyone was going out there winning the battle, all these things. No one was able to do it. No one was able to do it. And because no one was able to do it, they didn't feel so bad. No one did it, so hey, we're good. Right? Now that when Imam Ali went out and did it, now everyone's like ashamed. What did he do? I mean, you see, sometimes you do Islam by you being so good that others will start feeling ashamed and rectifying themselves. My friends, Karbala was needed. Karbala was needed. It was needed because the society had become so wrong and ugly that its ugliness needed to be shown. That's why you see, in order to expose the ugliness of the society, Ali Asghar was needed also. You know, Akbar was needed also. All of these were needed. Why? Because the society had become so ugly. So that they could be exposed. Imam Hussein went out to do Amr. I mean, really, Karbala was a place where it was really for those who are mu'min and love Imam Hussein and love Allah, for them it was a golden opportunity, my friends. Really, it was a golden opportunity. A mu'min who his long wish is to be with the Imam, to die with the Imam. Really, my friends. You know, 2 minutes of hardship and let Allah take you. That's all it is. How much do we fear for that 2 minutes of hardship? You know, I mean, how long does it take for you to die? 2 minutes? You know, 2 minutes of suffering. And on the other side, let Allah take you. And see what happens. For those who are mu'min, Karbala was that chance. You see, love can be seen in Karbala. Those who were with Hussein, they loved Hussein. And the animosity that the people had, was all that enrage that they had, was because of the intense love that those who were with Hussein had for Hussein. Really. My friends, just one point, and inshallah we'll go towards Karbala. right? I want you to see this, right? The intense hatred, you know, animosity is one thing, but having this intense hatred to do wrong, I mean, to do horrible things to someone. You know, where does that intensity come from? You know, when the kufr sees the love that a mu'min has for the truth, that is what burns him up the most. That's what burns him up the most inside. How is he so much attached to the truth? Why is he so much in love with this? That's what hates him. I mean, really, understand this. If we have that love for our leader, you'll see that the leader will have the authority and the ability to do Islah in the society. Really, if the followers have it, it's the followers' job. I told you, if the followers, they have that. And where do they get it from? It is from the love that they have for the truth. When they see a leader who stands for the truth, they are just in love. They're intoxicated in love with the leader because he is the leader of truth. They're intoxicated. If you want to learn how to be a follower, learn it from Imam Ali. You know, why did the people hate him with so much intensity? It's because he was the one who was the most in love with the Prophet. Until he was there, no one could come even close to the Prophet. He would not allow that. See, this is a follower. When followers become like this, then a leader can do Islah in the society. This is how to be a follower. Learn it from Ali. His love for the Prophet and his complete attachment and bond to the Prophet, that's it. When you have that type of following, then you will see a leader who is standing for the truth will be able to do Islah in the society. That's when it happens. You see, my friends, the hatred, the intensity of hatred is why? Why did the people hate him? Because he was so much attached to the Prophet. They didn't like it. Why is he so much in love? That's why they hated him. In Karbala also, why do you think that they hated the companions of Hussein? Because so much in love. And the ones who have more love, they hated him more intensely. That's why out of all the people in Karbala, you see, when you look at all the companions of Imam Hussein, everyone was cut to pieces. Everyone was cut to pieces. When they were cut to pieces, why were they cut? Because of their love for Hussein. Their attachment to Hussein. That's why they were so much harmed, cut, slashed. So much. And if you see Abbas, he was the one who was the most cut into pieces. Why? Because his love for Hussein was more than everyone else. His obedience to the truth was more than anyone else, Abbas. You know, Abul Fazl Abbas, you see, I mean, really, why did the people, you need to understand this. Ali did not leave someone who was just anyone. No, Abbas was someone who loved Hussein the most. That's why they hated him the most. He was the most obedient towards the truth. They hated him the most. That's why they come and came and cut him into pieces. Cut him into pieces. You know? You have heard this from me before, but just let me remind you, my friends. Let me remind you, you know, when they were rectifying the grave of Abbas. You know, his grave is underneath. The water flows to it. And it was flooded, so they had to rectify his grave. So the workers who were working there and the alim who was in charge there, the workers came to the alim and said, you know, we have a question. I have a question. This one worker said, I have a question. And they're mu'min. They're mu'min. They're Shias. They love Abbas. They love Abbas. You know, may our lives be sacrificed for Abbas. Really, you know. May. May we be sacrificed for him. Inshallah. May Allah make us a sacrifice for Abbas. At least then we will be able to enter heaven. You know, if you could be a sacrifice for him. You know, that worker asked the alim. You know, he said that, Agha, you know, I have always heard that Abbas was such a big man. He was such a huge man. That when he used to sit on the horse, his feet would touch the ground. He was such a big man. Agha, tell me, why is his grave only 4 feet tall? It looks like the grave of a child. This is a child's grave. 4 feet tall. I thought he would be a big grave. 7 foot grave, 8 foot grave. Why is it only 4 foot? The alim, he couldn't hold himself together, began to cry. And he said, you have asked me something that has broken my heart and every moment's heart since Karbala. And that is, that it is Abbas who did not want to go back to the tent. Hussein used to take everyone back to the tent because he knew that their bodies will be mutilated. But it was Abbas who said, I don't want to go back to the tent. So that Hussein left him by the river. When he died, then those cowards who were afraid to come before Abbas when he was alive, they came to him and they cut off his legs. And no, my friends, Abbas loved Hussein. Abbas loved Hussein, you know, even when he died, you know, at the time of his death, when Hussein was next to him, and when he was dying, and Hussein was next to him at the time Abbas took his last breath, really, Abbas was so ashamed of not doing what he had promised to do to Sakina. He said, I don't want to go back. You know, Hussein, you know, all his life, Abbas did not refer to Hussein as a brother. Always looked at him as a leader, as an imam. Always looked at him, and he called him by that also. It was Hussein's last wish. Really, Hussein's last wish from Abbas. He said, Abbas, all my life, you know, you are my brother. You are my brother. All my life, I have yearned to hear you call me brother. Abbas, one last time, call me brother. I'm not living for long, but that period I'm going to live for, from your death till my death, is not long. But at least there, I will live with this, that you have called me brother. Abbas called him brother before he died. Abbas called him brother before he died. It's not simple when you hear Hussein's word. I told you before, believing is necessary when you hear the words of Imam Hussein. When Hussein had said that, Abbas, your death has broken my back, it needs believing in. Truly, it needs believing in to see that Abbas broken. You know, even after the death, after his death, you know, if there is anyone that the people, that the ladies, the women and children that they used to remember after Karbala, it was Abbas. It was Abbas that they remembered everywhere. Everywhere they used to go, they remembered Abbas. Why? Because Abbas used to give them calm and peace. Even though they were in the midst of enemies, Abbas, when they looked at Abbas, they felt secure. They felt at peace. They felt tranquility when they looked at Abbas. You know, that's why when they were taken as prisoners, how they were taken and what type of humiliation? Really, my friends. Really, I mean, we require believing in to understand the musibat of Karbala. How they were taken as prisoners, you know. When they were taken as prisoners, their hands were tied in ropes. You know what that means? Their hands were tied in ropes. And they were tied to one another like a chain. And they were dragged. These are the women My friends, my friend, understand this. This is not easy. We need to comprehend it. If your wife or your sister, anyone insults them, how would you feel? How would you feel? Would you, what would come over you? There would be a rage that will come over you. But you know that Abbas, when he was taken with the caravan, Abbas's head would not stay on that spear that they put him on. It would keep falling down. It would keep falling down until they tied it to a horse, the neck of a horse. And it was tied to a neck of a horse. Someone in Kufa said, "Why is this head on the horse, not on a spear?" So they said, "We don't know. But you ask Imam Sajjad." They went to Imam Sajjad and they asked him, "Why is this head on the horse?" He said, "This is the head of my uncle Abbas." Abbas, when he's on the spear, he sees the head of Zainab and Umm Kulthum. Could not take it, he falls down. He falls down. Ya Mahmud Hakim. يا الله بحكم يا فاتر السماوات بحكم يا محسن بحكم يا قديم الأحسان بحكم والله give us the توفيق to be on the right path with the wisdom to listen hasten the reappearance of Allah make us his help وآخر الدعوان الحمد لله رب العالمين ما تنسى